This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega, and I'm so glad to be with you on this Friday. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation is more than a year old, but do you know how many crimes it's unearthed? 17 indictments and 5 guilty pleas.
Michael Flynn,
Paul Manafort,
Rick Gates,
Alex Van der Zwan,
George Papadopoulos,
13 Russian nationals and 3 Russian companies,
Richard Pinedo,
now indicted by the special counsel.
Crimes from conspiracy to bank fraud to lying to the FBI. And if you didn't know that, you're not alone. A new survey says the majority of Americans, 59%, don't think the probe has yielded any evidence of crimes. And then, of course, there's this repeated refrain through it all.
I have this witch hunt constantly going on for over 12 months now.
It's a total witch hunt. I've been saying it for a long time.
Phony witch hunt.
It's like a witch hunt.
The entire thing has been a witch hunt.
This is a pure and simple witch hunt.
Well, we're going to try to cut through some of that noise, because whatever you call it, there are some truths to lay out, some stories to get straight, and some questions to answer about the Russia investigation. And to help us make sense of all of this, I'm speaking with Josh Gerstein, a senior reporter for Politico, covering the White House and the Justice Department. And in the studio today, we have Ryan Goodman. He's an editor-in-chief of Just Security and former special counsel to the Department of Defense. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
So, Josh, it's Friday, and it feels like the end of another insane week in the Mueller probe. And I mean, I hate to say it, but what week doesn't? Yesterday, the Justice Department briefed congressional leaders on sensitive material regarding an FBI informant who met with Trump's aides during the campaign. So this is what the president is now calling Spygate. So first of all, Josh, if you could, tell us about who this alleged spy or informant is and his role.
Well, so the spy has been, or the spy as the president calls him, or the informant as others call him, is been reported to be a fellow by the name of Stefan Halper, who is a former White House official, a State Department official under several Republican administrations, if we go back about 20 or 30 years to the Reagan kind of Nixon era, something like that. So he's a very senior sort of foreign policy eminence grise, if you will, probably not terribly high profile, but people that travel in those circles would have heard of him. And in recent years, he had been a professor at Cambridge University in England. And the reports are, anyway, that in the course of this Russia investigation, as it began, the FBI, who apparently had some type of ongoing relationship with Halper over the years, dispatched him to reach out to a few people who were in the Trump campaign orbit to try to figure out whether what the FBI was hearing about possible interactions with the Russians or possible efforts by the Russians to hack emails of Democratic operatives to see what kind of information he could turn up. And he apparently did have a series of meetings with individuals in the Trump campaign and individuals in the Trump foreign policy circles, people whose names folks may have heard of, like George Papadopoulos, other folks like Sam Clovis is another name. And he made some effort for the FBI to bring them some intelligence about what was going on.
And Ryan, I'm curious about, you know, we're using these words interchangeably, I think, to a certain extent, spy versus informant. Can you help us understand the difference between those terms and why it matters?
So if we think of it as an informant, then it fits right within standard operating procedures of how the FBI would go about either conducting a counterintelligence investigation or also a potential criminal investigation. At this point, it seemed to have just been a counterintelligence investigation, and it did seem to, in fact, reflect standard operating procedures in which the FBI identified specific individuals who might have been operating as potential agents of a foreign power. So like George Papadopoulos and Carter are both individuals who – Carter Page are both individuals who at that point in time were doing quite nefarious things directly with the Russians. And that's how it fits. I think the terminology of spy is just being bandied about, particularly by the president, to try to suggest that this was like something much more nefarious and politicized, as though the FBI was spying on his campaign and had political motives behind it. So I think that's what's going on in the kind of struggle as to how this episode is framed.
And I'll ask you both, how has the FBI justified the use of an informant? There was an interview earlier this week with Clapper saying, you know, that this was really meant to focus on whether there was Russian interference or not. But the president and Republicans are suggesting that all of this was politically motivated.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen no indication at this point that it was politically motivated, but you're right. The president continues to frame it as the Obama FBI or the Obama administration sending a spy into his campaign, has suggested that maybe this was actually done at the instigation of Hillary Clinton. The FBI has been pretty quiet about this publicly. Indeed, one of their complaints here is that, you know, there is a risk at publicizing these kinds of informant-based operations that nobody will want to cooperate with the FBI. In more extreme cases, there's obviously a danger to people's physical safety. We don't know what other things Mr. Halper might have done for the FBI over the years that might have been potentially more perilous than just trying to talk to senior officials in the Trump campaign. But I would say, you know, there is a certain degree of legitimacy to the concerns that some people express here, because it is very unusual for the FBI to be running informants at people on a major presidential campaign. And there is the risk, intentional or not, when you do that, that you can have some impact. You may be just trying to soak up information, but just by interacting with those folks, you can potentially sort of alter the outcome of events. And so it is something that you would want to have overseen in a pretty tight way by the FBI and the Justice Department.
Ryan, your thoughts on that?
So yesterday was a meeting between the senior officials of the FBI and the Justice Department with members of Congress, the Gang of Eight, I guess, plus one, from the Hill. And the Schiff and the other Democrats, at least, have issued a statement that there was no evidence provided that would support this theory of a spy being placed inside the campaign for political motive. And there are some other data points that I think are important to try to make sense of all of this. So the thought or theory that this was some attempt to expose the campaign and put them in jeopardy and not inform the campaign, in fact, that they were potentially the target of a Russian influence campaign. So NBC reported several months ago that, in fact, Donald Trump himself, with some of his senior members of his campaign, was given an intelligence briefing by senior intelligence officials in August, telling them that Russians were attempting to influence American elections, dating many elections back, but as well as this election, and to inform the FBI if there was anything that they had any knowledge of, which they did not do. So this is not, if you put all the data points together, it doesn't build up to any kind of a theory that I think works here. And there really isn't any evidence that's being presented publicly that would even suggest this notion of this politicized reason for the FBI to conduct the investigation. Just one other data point. If you look at what the FBI was otherwise doing during the election, obviously they did not make this public. That's a concern that some have about it. But the New York Times reported, for example, the entire investigation around Paul Manafort and his money laundering and his ties to the Ukrainians went into a quote-unquote low simmer. The FBI and Justice Department decided to put it on a low simmer because they didn't want to interfere with the election. So, you know, you have to make sense of all the data points if you're going to build a theory. And I think many of these data points don't support the one that the president is trying to promulgate.
And you mentioned yesterday's meeting, and I want to talk to both of you about that. Why were congressional Democrats upset that the president's chief of staff, John Kelly, and lawyer Emmett Flood were in those briefings yesterday? The White House is arguing that they were entitled to be there. Who's right, Josh?
Well, yeah, I was standing there as Emmett Flood and John Kelly went by us at the Justice Department to go into and out of the meeting that was held there with a few of the congressional leaders, including Paul Ryan, the House Speaker. We were quite surprised to see Emmett Flood there. I think in sort of a more general sense, it maybe is not a startling development in the sense that Emmett Flood, you know, officially is a White House employee. He works in the White House counsel's office. One of the things that he's responsible for is dealing with Congress and trying to figure out some of the complicated issues about what kind of information Congress should be entitled to have and what the executive branch wants to hold back. So I think in sort of more normal, less tense times, his presence there might have not been as concerning to folks. But given the fact that it seems like Flood's main responsibility at the moment is sort of holding back the tide of the Mueller investigation and helping to manage the Mueller investigation for President Trump. There were a number of Democrats who thought it was totally inappropriate for Flood to be there. And it was also a little bit weird that you would have somebody like John Kelly and Flood show up at these meetings, given that they're not, as far as we know, privy to the information that the FBI or the DNI, Director of National Intelligence, and others were planning to brief Congress on. The White House eventually said that Kelly and Flood had only come in briefly at the beginning of both these meetings to sort of state the president's preference for being as transparent as possible with Congress, and that then they departed, which is also sort of a weird tap dance.
So let's turn to the study, right, that we've laid the groundwork. Let's look at this study by Navigator Research that says that 59% of Americans think that Mueller's investigation has not uncovered any evidence of crimes. And for those keeping score at home, so far Mueller has obtained 5 guilty pleas, 17 criminal indictments. Why do people think he's not doing anything? Ryan?
It's hard to fathom. The part of it that's hard to fathom is the number is so high, 59% saying no. Whereas you could maybe think, well, it's because people have filter bubbles. They're maybe getting their information from a certain source of media. Fox News is not necessarily broadcasting these events in the criminal indictments and the guilty pleas as much. And they're hearing from the president directly, if that's their primary source of information, one of their primary sources of information, that everything's a hoax and that every time there's an indictment, quote unquote, no collusion. But it's 59%. So it's not as though 59% of the American public only get their source of information from those channels. But maybe those channels are also bleeding into the other channels. So it's a very high number. And what's also remarkable about that study is that of all the respondents, they actually also said 81% said that they were following or had aware of the investigation higher than a small amount, higher than a little amount. So in fact, 49% said that they had heard a lot about the investigation.
Is that our fault? Is that the media's fault, Ryan?
I think there has to be some responsibility there because it's not working. I mean, these are just facts. It's not about anything else in terms of there have, in fact, been crimes uncovered by the Mueller investigation, including a massive indictment of Russians for their social media campaign and their effort to interfere in the election. In fact, the indictment says that the Russians referred to that as, quote, an operation that was information warfare against the United States.
Josh, I asked Ryan if that's our fault, i.e. the media's fault. You're a reporter. What do you think?
I think it could be. It could be somewhat our fault. I mean, I think the other element that you see here are there's two things that come to mind. One, it is true that Mueller's investigation has not yet produced charges of collusion, as the president brings out, a direct collusion between his Trump campaign officials and Russian operatives. And so there's a sense that the holy grail that Mueller may be looking for, either he hasn't found it yet or has yet to reveal it. So I think if people have a sense of incompleteness with the investigation or a sense that it hasn't delivered, you know, that there is something at the core of that. The other thing I think in terms of the way these matters are presented in the media is you have the president, who's a very powerful mouthpiece, who is doing this sort of branding and putting these watchwords out there like no collusion, Spygate, witch hunt, as you covered earlier. And on the other side, it's a more diffuse message. You don't have a clear messenger. There's been no Robert Mueller press conference. There's been only one official event that I know of, which was Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein coming out to announce the Russian troll indictment that Ryan referred to earlier. Rosenstein stood there alone at a podium. Mueller was not even there. And Mueller's prosecutors generally do all their speaking in court. There is no video. There is no audio. There is only the bare words that they recite and that we reporters relay. And you see them coming and going. But they're not as much in a position to be laying out their accomplishments in a way that TV and radio, for example, can digest on a daily or weekly basis.
Well, what we did before this segment was we asked our listeners to ask us questions. We want to help them understand what's going on. So we have a question from Mike.
My name is Mike from Highland Park, Illinois. Why can't Robert Mueller's team break their investigation into parts and read out the parts they finish without waiting until the entire investigation is complete?
Ryan, what do you think?
So in a sense, they really are actually adopting that approach. It used to be that many thought at the start of the investigation that we'd all have to wait an indefinite period of time, and at the very end of that time, bam, he would unveil everything. But it seems to be rolling indictments. So the fact that we have one after another that Mueller is willing to present, I think, is important. And then another piece of this is that sometimes he presents guilty pleas that actually were made months earlier. So a lot of it is also secret, but he might actually be reaching certain milestones in between. But we really do have this kind of rolling process in which people are predicting who's going to be next.
I want to take a call, Josh, and I'd be curious to hear your response to this. Let's listen to this caller.
This is June from the San Francisco Bay Area. I was wondering, how long does a counterintelligence investigation of this scope usually take? Because a common complaint from Republicans is that it's taking too long. Is it?
Josh?
I think that counterintelligence investigations often take an extraordinarily long period of time, a matter of years, to develop the contacts and the information necessary to bring charges. I think what other people have also compared these to are some of the independent counsel investigations, these sort of special prosecutor type probes that took place more frequently when there was a law, specific law that authorized them, as opposed to the somewhat improvised way we're doing it now. But under that law, it wasn't uncommon for those investigations to take multiple years. One of them ran for a whole decade. So for Mueller to have been at work for a year is really not very long. And if you consider that the investigation's also going to have to span, I think, at least as long as some of these major prosecutions are underway, such as the two cases against Paul Manafort, it seems to me inevitable that we were looking at a time frame here of at least a couple of years to get through this inquiry.
Let's take one more call from our listeners.
Hi, this is Matt from Fort Worth. I'm wondering if special counsel could indict members of Congress for impeding an open investigation.
Ryan, your thoughts on that?
So members of Congress could engage in criminal activity and they wouldn't be immune from that, including obstruction of justice. Former Senator Boxer just last night, in fact, warned Representative Nunes that he might be coming close to that line. Senator Whitehouse has said something similar about Nunes, and I do think it can raise a serious concern. There are legitimate ways in which Congress can engage in oversight, but if they really are trying to undermine the investigation for ulterior motives, that's a different story.
We're coming up on the absolute end of the segment, and I want to answer the question, is this a witch hunt? You got three choices. Yes, no, wait and see. Ryan?
No.
Josh?
I don't think it is, no.
Josh Gerstein is a senior reporter for Politico covering the White House and the Justice Department, and Ryan Goodman is editor-in-chief of Just Security and former special counsel to the Department of Defense. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.